will live in fear. Three people were killed recently, two belonged to the former Afghan military.
Islamic State attacks rising in Afghanistan. It's Monday, December 13th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Democracy Summit Next Steps. 6 years after Paris Climate Accord, marking International Human Rights Day, lung cancer medical advances, non-citizens gain voting rights. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Since the Taliban took over Afghanistan in August, attacks by the Islamic State affiliate have stepped up, especially in the country's eastern Nangarhar province. Civilians in the region say they fear the threat of the violence posed by the group known as the Islamic State Khorasan, or ISK. Gaha Pellegrini Batoli reports for VOA from Afghanistan.
IS Khorasan has launched strikes in recent months throughout Afghanistan as the Taliban attempts to consolidate power following their takeover of the country in August. In Nangarhar province, a day does not go by without an attack. Some people are too frightened to speak up, though others want the rest of the world to know what is going on.
Living here is so difficult because of the lack of security. Before we used to have engineers and doctors, now the situation is worse. We live in fear. Three people were killed recently, two belonged to the former Afghan military.
One group, no, and four and five group. Daesh, Al-Qaeda, Haqqani, Taliban, government, and all.
This is the scene of a roadside bombing. A Taliban fighter and two civilians were injured. These kinds of attacks are terrorizing the population, says a civilian who witnessed the attack.
There are threats from different networks. This includes risks for civilians. The situation is very dangerous. We cannot leave our homes. There are many different networks killing people.
But the local Taliban commander says the ISK threat in Chaparhar district is non-existent.
ISK doesn't have anyone here. They just want to show the world that they exist. It's possible they may have some people here using their name just to get money, but there aren't any security issues here.
The Taliban, with approximately 70,000 fighters, have been carrying out operations against the ISK militants, who are believed to number between 2 and 3,000 extremists. As the violence continues, civilians are not even sure which factions in the country are responsible for the carnage. All they know is that the attacks are mounting and they are scared. Gaya Pellegrini Batoli for VOA News, Nangarhar, Afghanistan.
Find more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. Borders in the French Pacific territory of New Caledonia voted overwhelmingly Sunday to stay part of France in an independence referendum marred by a boycott from separatist forces. They had called for the vote to be delayed because of the pandemic and were angry over what they said were government efforts to sway the campaign. French President Emmanuel Macron hailed the result and ordered the launch of negotiations on the territory's future status. Official results showed 96% of voters favored staying in France. Keeping New Caledonia is important for French geopolitical ambitions in the Indo-Pacific, and the vote was closely watched amid growing Chinese influence in the region. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. China's Xi and Russia's Putin dominate G7. U.S., Australia, and Japan to fund undersea cable in the Pacific. COVID-19 disrupts education for more than 400 million in South Asia. Uzbekistan urges other nations to help neighboring Afghanistan. Experts doubt Bangladesh student murder convicts will serve harsh sentences. Find complete coverage on all these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. Thank you for listening to VOA Asia on this Monday. The two-day virtual summit for democracy hosted by U.S. President Joe Biden wrapped up on Friday. The U.S., Australia, Denmark, and Norway announced an export control program to monitor and restrict the spread of technologies used to violate human rights. The U.S. is also launching programs to support independent media and anti-corruption efforts and defend free and fair elections. VOA's chief White House correspondent Patsy Wiedekuswara has more.
From robots patrolling behavior, facial recognition surveillance, to software that turns phones into spying devices. Such technology is often used by governments to target political opponents, activists, journalists, and minority groups.
We focused on the need to empower human rights defenders and make sure technology enables so much of our lives that is used to advance democracies, to lift people up, not to hold them down.
As the two-day virtual summit for democracy hosted by President Joe Biden wrapped up on Friday, the U.S., Australia, Denmark, and Norway announced an export control program to restrict the spread of technologies used to violate human rights. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
We've seen the expanded misuse of spyware and other surveillance technology to monitor citizens far beyond what's needed to fight the virus. We've seen the rapid spread of disinformation and misinformation.
The U.S. also announced initiatives to empower human rights defenders, support free and fair elections, independent media, and anti-corruption efforts. Transparency International, a global civil society organization working in the fight against corruption, said the summit's initial outcomes are promising, but more needs to be done. Gary Kalman directs their U.S. office.
Other countries did not step up and commit to specific commitments the way the U.S. has. And so that is a concern. What are they actually going to come up with? They have a little bit more time. The U.S. government's giving them until January to come back with commitments.
Some say the $424 million in U.S. funds for these initiatives, still subject to congressional approval, barely meets the need to bolster democracy globally. Brett Bruin is director of global engagement during the Obama administration and president of the consulting firm Global Situation Room.
These are initiatives and monies that have been allocated already generally for democracy, for the rule of law and human rights. They get to repurpose them for a new announcement. But what we're not seeing here are really substantial sums that are being put on the table.
Democracy is also under attack by the global rise of populism, white supremacy, and extremism, said UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Polarization is undermining democratic institutions. Science and reason are under siege. All of these is eroding trust between people and democratic leaders and institutions.
An in-person summit is planned a year from now. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News.
Still to come on VOA Asia, assessing where we are in the climate change fight 6 years after the Paris Climate Accord. Happening now in Asia, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is due in the Indonesian capital, Jakarta, on Monday. He will also visit Malaysia and Thailand on his first Southeast Asia trip since President Joe Biden took office in January. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Continuing now with VOA Asia, 6 years ago, nearly 200 nations signed the Paris Climate Accord, where they agreed to keep the rise in global temperatures at 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial times. Scientists say that threshold is an absolute minimum to avoid catastrophic climate change. For VOA from Paris, Maria Galavan looks at the situation now.
Our fragile planet is hanging by a thread. We are still knocking on the door of climate catastrophe.
As he wound up the recent COP26 in Glasgow, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres had that harsh warning for the 200 countries who had gathered to talk climate change and how to slow it down. Hanging over the summit was the deadline of 2030 for a drastic reduction of greenhouse emissions that was set 6 years ago at COP21 in Paris. Paris. Former Executive Secretary of the UN Climate Convention, Christiana Figueres, remembers it as a historic event.
It was a real breakthrough for the United Nations to have a completely unanimous, legally binding pathway for decarbonizing the global economy.
Secretary of State at the time, John Kerry, signed that agreement for the U.S.
It really was an exciting moment when 196 countries come together simultaneously, all wanting to move in the same direction, understanding the stakes.
2015 was the hottest year on record. Scientists pointed to that as sure proof that global warming was real and serious. But that record keeps on getting broken as the planet gets hotter year by year. The World Meteorological Organization says the planet has been propelled into uncharted territory with rising sea levels, melting glaciers, and relentless extreme weather events. The WMO warns that extreme weather is the new normal. Nonetheless, both Figueres and Kerry remain optimistic.
We are moving in the right direction. The question is the timing. And I do feel that everyone came out of Glasgow with a renewed sense of timing.
Kerry is now President Biden's special envoy for climate. He was back in Paris this week as part of a whistle-stop tour of Europe to reassure leaders the U.S. is back in the game after former President Donald Trump shut the door on climate issues.
No one country can save this. Everybody has to act.
That was also perhaps the main takeaway from the Glasgow summit, as developing nations pleaded with their richer neighbours not to be complacent with what has been achieved, but to keep pushing hard to meet that 2030 deadline to save the planet. Maria Gallivan for VOA News, Paris.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Opponents of military rule in Myanmar held one of their biggest nationally coordinated protests in months Friday, successfully calling on people across the country to shut their businesses and stay home on International Human Rights Day. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. Growing inequality and the proliferation of multiple crises around the world have dashed hopes raised for a better, more equitable world 73 years after the UN General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warns the world is at a crossroads.
The COVID-19 pandemic, the climate crisis, and the expansion of digital technology into all areas of our lives have created new threats to human rights. Exclusion and discrimination are rampant, public space is shrinking, poverty and hunger are rising for the first time in decades, millions of children are missing out on their right to education, inequality is deepening.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet says the cost of soaring inequalities is intolerable. But since the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was adopted in 1948, she notes significant strides, if not progress, have been made. She says the world has grown richer, people are living longer, and more women have gained a greater measure of autonomy. Over the past 20 years, however, she says a succession of global shocks has undermined that progress. She says it is particularly distressing to realize the extent to which inequalities are fueling the devastation caused by the coronavirus pandemic on people's lives. Bachelet recently returned from a mission to Burkina Faso and Niger, countries riven by violence and lawlessness. Her spokesman, Rupert Colville, says the High Commissioner saw the ruinous impact on those societies from the pandemic, climate change, economic distress, and inequality. Colville says Bachelet clearly understood how it is that young men who have no jobs, no future, no hope, are tempted to join the armed struggle when offered a gun and $10.
There you see the knock-on effect, which then results in people being killed, in villages being destroyed, in women being raped, and in just general horror stories, but which are rooted in the socioeconomic problems and inequalities that we're talking about today.
Human Rights Chief Bachelet says equality is at the heart of human rights. She says equality also is at the heart of the solutions that can carry humanity through this period of global crisis. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Making headlines in Asia, Masayuki Uemura, a Japanese home computer game pioneer whose Nintendo consoles sold millions of units worldwide, has died, according to the university in Kyoto where he taught. He was 78. Stay up to date with VOA or listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Lung cancer is the deadliest form of the disease, according to the American Cancer Society. But it doesn't get nearly the same amount of research dollars as breast or prostate cancer. That may be changing, thanks to one man's efforts and new guidelines from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC. VOA's Saba Shahan reports.
Lung cancer kills more people in the United States each year than colon, breast, and prostate cancer combined. It accounts for roughly 25% of all cancer deaths, according to the American Cancer Society. While smokers are the most vulnerable, anyone can be affected. Former National Football League player Chris Draft has lived these statistics. He lost his wife to the deadly disease just a month after their wedding in 2011.
So she was stage 4 lung cancer, 37 years old, no history of smoking. This ultimate healthy lifestyle, go-get-it person. Unfortunately, is diagnosed late. And then there's been some amazing advancements. Those advancements, a lot of them really, you can trace them directly from 2011. But unfortunately, my wife couldn't be on some of the newer targeted therapies. So she was on standard chemo and passed a year later.
To honor her memory, he founded the Team Draft Family Foundation to help lung cancer patients and their families while also campaigning for more research. Draft's foundation was created before his marriage, when his then-fiancée asked friends and family members to donate to the foundation instead of giving them wedding gifts. 10 years later, Team Draft continues to advocate for lung cancer research. The field has advanced significantly in the last few years, say doctors.
There are groups of patients who have a threshold level of smoking whose lives can be saved by doing a screening study, which is a CAT scan. Additionally, there are a lot of advances in the medical treatment of lung cancer such that we can look at genetic signatures or markers within a tumor, and we now have medicines that can actually target those specific cells, which is also a great advance over the last decade in lung cancer.
In light of these new therapies, the CDC recently modified its lung cancer guidelines. The new guidelines recommend that smokers who have been smoking for 15 years get a CT scan every year at the age of 50. Unless at high risk, non-smokers are not subject to any screening criteria at the moment. As with all cancers, the goal is to catch the disease in its early stages.
When we find people who have lung cancer, the tumors tend to be smaller and earlier stage so that we can intervene with modalities like surgery to try and cure them.
Screening scans have cut lung cancer fatalities by 26% in men and 61% in women, according to the European Cancer Research. Draft says research is the key to saving lives.
So if we want things to change, we need to lean in on the research. People who have less of a smoking history or not one at all can get, you know, where they can detect it early. That we go and save as many of the people as possible that we have now.
Lung cancer affects more women than men worldwide, with over 600,000 women dying from the disease each year. Saba Shahan, VOA News, Washington.
This is Science in a Minute.
Back in 2011, astronomers found a mysterious object at the center of the Milky Way. After the scientists studied the object at different wavelengths, they determined that it had to be a cloud of dust and gas, which they named G2. But they were surprised that the nearby supermassive black hole, Sagittarius A star, didn't rip it to shreds. Now, 10 years later, a research team led by scientists from the University of Cologne's Institute of Astrophysics has found that G2 is not a gas and dust cloud, but are three young stars. The researchers calculated that the stars began to form only a million years ago, which in astronomical terms is quite young. The team used the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope in Chile to observe the tiny nursery. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Finally on VOA Asia, the New York City Council voted on Thursday to allow non-U.S. citizens to vote in municipal elections. The move will allow some 800,000 city residents in the largest city in the U.S. to have a voice in their local community for the first time. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti has more on the limited expansion of voting rights.
This is New York City, with twice weekly tango classes on a city pier. This is Jacqueline Godoy, who will soon be doing something else you don't expect.
We're going to feel like truly New Yorkers.
Godoy is a non-U.S. citizen who can now vote in New York City's local elections. Much different, she says, than voting in her home country of Venezuela.
It is well known that election over there had been fraudulent. So over here, somehow, you have some guarantees, and you can make sure that your vote counts.
Today, we are making history here.
On Thursday, the New York City Council passed a law giving 800,000 more people the right to vote. That includes those with work authorizations, green cards, so-called dreamers who settled in the United States as minors, and other legal non-citizens. New York City is not the first. Several cities in Maryland, Vermont, and California offer some voting rights to non-citizens. But the idea is not expected to expand to state or federal elections.
I think at the federal level, no, given the current Congress. The state level, it's possible. I think there probably would be more resistance.
On the streets of the nation's most populous city, thoughts are mainly positive.
They're in their schools, their universities, they're in their work. So they are actually contributing to our society already. So why not give them a voice to vote?
Whether you was living here 30 days or 30 years, we all should be treated equally.
Finding someone opposed to the measure is not easy in this city of more than 3 million immigrants, but there are some.
Letting them here and giving them the right to at least work here, they should be happy with that.
Meanwhile, Republican New York State Senator Rob Ort wrote that allowing non-citizens to vote is wrong, as it would devalue the votes of citizens and is disrespectful to immigrants who work toward citizenship and the privilege to vote. There's also the work involved in issuing two sets of ballots, an additional one for the new voters limited to local contests, when state and federal offices are also in play.
So I think it's going to be a huge administrative challenge, actually, to the Board of Elections to do this right.
Intro 1867A is hereby adopted.
As the saying goes, it takes two to tango. Godoy says for her first election, she will vote for a candidate the way she chooses a dance partner, someone who connects with her and in whom she trusts. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. That's all the time we have for today's VOA Asia. Make sure you find us on all our social media platforms. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Cascao in Washington. Enjoy the day, stay safe, and be well.